Welcome to Making a Difference, a Junction Journalism production. I'm Sarah Amir.
And I'm Eve Cogan. This episode of Making a Difference has been produced by journalism students at the University of Technology Sydney on Gadigal Country.
In this episode, we'll be bringing you a story about Muslim women and their decision to don the hijab. The hijab is a highly contested piece of religious dress that has long been regarded as a tool used for the oppression of Muslim women. Only, most Muslim women choose to cover and deem the hijab a symbolic representation of their relationship with God.
So where did we go wrong? When did the hijab, a harmless expression of one's religious beliefs, become associated with extremism and control?
A lot of different factors are to blame. To break down these factors, we sat down with five Muslim women from different walks of life who all choose to cover for various reasons. And they all share a common thread. None of them believe that the perception of Muslim women in the mainstream reflects who they actually are.
Muslim women haven't been given enough of an opportunity to unapologetically and honestly share who they are and what's important to them. So let's find out.
Meet Noor. She's a university student, artist, and equity advocate from Sydney. I'm sitting down to chat with her through Zoom. She tells me she's been spending a lot of time at home, studying, doing chores, and finishing up the final semester of her degree.
So my name is Noor Elhuda Elzamira. I am 23 years old and I have been wearing the niqab for 6 to 7 years.
So Sarah, what's the niqab?
The niqab is a face veil worn by Muslim women. So Noor, what were your initial motivations for choosing to wear your niqab those 6 to 7 years ago?
I want to be very clear that my experiences with the niqab not in one moment, but over time, I guess. Before I chose to wear the niqab, I was at a point in high school where I'd been wanting to become closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and develop my relationship with Him.
Subhanahu wa ta'ala is an Arabic honorific attributed to God, translating to the glorified and exalted.
What's the significance of using this phrase in this context?
Yeah, so Muslims use it to reflect their inner feelings of love and respect for God through their language.
I was also listening to Islamic talks and lectures and things like that. One of the speakers I listened to talked about modesty, and I realized at that point I was like, okay, I think for me this is what I want to do to develop my relationship with God. I want to work on my modesty. And so for me, I felt like that was an easy decision. But funnily enough, one of the first times, if not the first time, that I tried on the niqab, people usually say things like, oh, you know, I felt so relieving, I was so happy at that point. For me, actually, I cried. It was actually, for me, a bit of a shock, because I think I was so used to the idea that your face holds your identity. Your smile is like something you use to communicate with people, to connect. And so me covering my face almost felt like I was, I guess, cutting that connection. And like, I don't know like how to describe it fully, because I'm still trying to understand why I felt that way 6 or 7 years back. But it was just very overwhelming for me.
Today, most people understand the word hijab as an umbrella term which encapsulates all forms of Muslim veils. Is that an accurate depiction of its meaning?
Yeah, that's right. So in Arabic, the word hijab translates to barrier or partition. Interestingly, the concept of hijab in Islamic doctrine actually goes far beyond the physical veil itself. Observing hijab also encompasses behaving modestly and consists of a range of characteristics required of both women and men.
You mentioned that both men and women observe hijab. What's hijab for men?
So, Solith Bovaers, a researcher from the International Institute of Islamic Thought, says that while many people think that Muslim women are enjoined to wear the hijab primarily to restrain men's illicit desires, this is not true. It is not women's duty to regulate the behaviour of men. Men are accountable for their own conduct. They are equally required to be modest and to handle themselves responsibly. So this means that both men and women need to observe hijab, but they do so in different ways. Men are also required to dress and behave modestly, and this includes things like lowering their gaze around women so as not to objectify them.
Let's get back to Noor. You mentioned that you struggled with your sense of identity when you first wore your niqab. How did you regain your sense of self over time?
I think my feeling towards the niqab hasn't necessarily changed over the 6 to 7 years. I think my understanding of why I reacted the way I did has changed. I guess I wasn't raised in only a Muslim society. I was raised in an Australian Muslim society. And so that meant that, whether or not I realized, my perceptions had been influenced by Western media. It had been influenced by influences that weren't necessarily Islamic, and so they were conflicting, and for me that would have caused an odds in how I valued my religion and how I valued my dress and attire. And so over the years my understanding of my circumstances has changed, and I think it's allowed me to understand that.
Throughout your chat with Noor, Sarah, she takes a lot of long pauses.
Yeah, she's making sure to really think of her responses to my questions before she says them out loud. I can tell she cares deeply about her niqab and wants her experiences to be conveyed authentically.
Although society might be at odds with my dress and they might act like they're inclusive of it, there is still that gap on their side to fully accepting me, and so I shouldn't depend my acceptance on them but myself. And so over these 6 to 7 years, it's also kind of been a journey for me to develop that self-love and that self-appreciation and that appreciation of my religion.
Noor tells me that both non-Muslims and Muslims often question her intentions behind wearing niqab. She's been accused of dressing to assist the male gaze, something she says couldn't be further from the truth.
A non-Muslim was to ask me why I wore the niqab, what would I answer? I think to preface that question, I know would have had to consider who the person was, what sort of level of consciousness and awareness of Islam they had, and how that came across to me, and if I felt comfortable then, in response to all of that, to delve into Islam to them. What I would want to answer with is that it is a way for me to please Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The reason why I wear this niqab is not to please men. It is not to cover myself up because of the male gaze. It is part of how I go about pleasing God. And so I do remember actually this one time, this experience I had with a non-Muslim not accepting this answer because she still thought that the reason why I wore the niqab was because I was wearing it to suit the male gaze.
In a patriarchal world, it looks like even a decision as private and personal as observing hijab to strengthen one's relationship with God can be interpreted as pandering to the male gaze.
And so it's kind of ridiculous when people who don't practice Islam come to us telling us, this is your religion, even though they don't practice it, which is kind of funny because it's like, you're not Muslim, so where are you getting this information from?
All of the women we spoke to for this documentary recounted instances of having their hijab and Muslim identity defined by people who don't wear hijab or who are not Muslim.
Hey, I'm a Muslim. I'm a feminist. I decided to wear the hijab out of my own choice. I was never forced into doing so. And I guess for me, I saw it as a sign of empowerment. It made me feel unique compared to my peers.
Meet Hiba Al-Swaidi. She's a 20-year-old Iraqi-Australian from Perth who identifies as an intersectional feminist.
Hiba has an impressive resume for her short time working for non-for-profits. She is a council member of the Young Women's Council of Australia and the secretary of the Metropolitan Migrant Resource Centre.
She's also heavily involved in politics. She says it's the most effective way to make developments for people like her. Hiba has been wearing the hijab since age 9.
I decided to take it upon myself to wear the hijab. I wanted to stand out, I wanted to be unique, and to take my religion and use it to my advantage, I decided to wear the hijab. And upon wearing that hijab, I began to grow personally. I became closer to God. Upon becoming closer to God, I feel like I started becoming more empowered to fulfill my purpose in a way and to further progress onto why I am here on earth.
I've sat down to chat with Hiba through Zoom. She's sitting in her uni library making sure not to speak too loudly. I can hear some whispered chatter of students around her.
I don't really understand sometimes why people think it is a sign of oppression when I myself decided to take that route. maybe because they think that my parents made me do it because they think my father is more dominant than I am, but that's not true. I decided to wear it at the age of 9, despite my dad telling me not to do so.
The media has also played a large part in the classification of the hijab as a symbol of oppression. Mainstream perceptions of Muslim women are often shaped by how they are characterized online. But what happens if these representations are inaccurate?
It sets the precedent that anybody can come up to you and have those opinions and can invade your personal privacy. Everybody likes to have a pop at Muslim women. You know, we're pretty low on the totem pole. And I think that it's that kind of publicity on that level that is so damaging to regular Muslim women going about their lives. I think it just makes it okay to have a pop at Muslim women and to criticize them for something that's a personal choice and to make their hijab become a discussion for everyone.
Meet Najma Sample. She's a 26-year-old Somali-Australian freelance journalist who has acquired bylines in the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age and MTV Australia. Najma has been wearing the hijab since she was just a kid, admiring her mum and older sisters, who served as inspiration for kickstarting her own hijab journey.
I think at the moment we have, you know, two kind of areas where one is we speak about hijab in terms of, you know, we politicize it a lot, right? So we talk about it in terms of, you know, which country is oppressing women by forcing them to wear the hijab. You know, we have conversations about Iran. We have conversations about Saudi. We have conversations about a lot of Muslim majority countries and, you know, how they, I guess, enforce hijab. And that's one aspect of it. So I guess in that light, hijab is weaponized as something that is part of the Islamic ideology that oppresses women. And then we have another stream now, which is people trying to, you know, view hijab in a way that is a symbol of how far we've moved on from those concepts and the fact that it's an important part of representation in the media. I say that because of the surge of Muslim identities in the media that wear the hijab or head covering in any way. I think there are two things and they're two extremes. So one is like it's heavily politicized and the other one is it's diluted.
So it sounds like the two extremes are, on one end, we have the hijab being weaponized as a form of oppression. And on the other hand, we have a politicized or diluted representation. What does she mean by that?
I think what Najma is trying to say is that the hijab is only presented in a positive light for superficial means. The concept of the hijab identity has emerged, which allows large corporations and media companies to financially profit from the inclusion of hijab-wearing women in their content. However, these campaigns are rarely considerate of the woman herself and only utilize her hijab to appear inclusive for the purpose of selling products. This is an emerging issue in the age of performative activism.
We are fighting for a seat at the table where the table was never designed for us to be there in the first place. We need to start having conversations which are honest about the reason why we wear hijab in the first place and to not, I guess, remove the core value of why we want to wear hijab, why we practice in this way our faith. Because right now it's all becoming a little bit too superficial at the moment. And a lot of what, I guess, mainstream media have been able to do is to present the hijab as an identity. When the hijab is not an identity, the Muslim is the identity. And they're conflating the two and it's becoming really problematic. Because once you do that, it becomes a really binary way of looking at the hijab.
Throughout my chats with Noor, Hiba and Najma, they all identified the danger that Muslim women can be in due to their hijab. Noor tells me that she believes Muslims are targeted politically as a tool to point out difference, and as the hijab is an easily identifiable symbol associated with Islam, It's often Muslim women who are most at danger of Islamophobia.
The fact that we continue to practice our faith through wearing the clothes that we wear, it's actually a very identifying part of how we practice Islam as Muslim women. So it's very easy for people who have tendency toward discriminating in general, like to point towards our dress because it's different to what they wear and it's not the norm. It's very easy to point towards that and take out their feelings of hatred and frustration against us in that sense.
How dangerous is this othering of Muslim women?
Very easy answer, very dangerous. I think people very easily forget that as soon as you come across something that's different, it's different for a reason. It operates under different mindsets, practices, values, under a different way of perceiving life and the people around you. And so what's easy for non-Muslim media to do is to point towards something that they are not and say this is how it should be, because they don't understand that their society works in one way and our society works in a different way. And so it's dangerous because it makes the non-Muslim person the norm for what should be in any situation, and it disregards that we operate under our own structures.
What would Islamophobia look like day-to-day for Noor and the other women who observe hijab?
So, according to a 2019 report from Charles Sturt University, Muslim women and girls are being targeted with verbal abuse, profanities, physical intimidation, and death threats in public places, most often while shopping, and most often by Anglo-Celtic male perpetrators. Najma says this increase in Islamophobia is normalizing hatred against Muslim women.
There's really this scary, this scary movement against Muslim women, particularly because we do stand out, that not many people want to talk about. The implications of that for a Muslim audience is that's just going to normalize hatred against Muslim women. And that makes me feel uncomfortable that we're being spotlighted like that, especially when we're so easily identifiable.
While we've mainly focused on the experiences of women born into Islam, observing the hijab for a Muslim convert can be a separate experience. These women don't always have the support and guidance of their friends and family, which can complicate things.
Meet Sia Zarkos. She's a 29-year-old Greek-Australian from Sydney who works at the Islamic Sciences and Research Academy of Australia. She reverted to Islam 10 years ago and has been wearing the hijab for 4 years.
Reverted? Does that mean she has a background in the faith?
So, according to Islam, children are born with an innate sense of submission to God, while their parents may then raise them in a different faith community. The word revert means to return to a former condition or belief, so a revert to Islam is returning back to that innate faith which they were connected to as young children, which is why the word revert can be used instead of convert.
That's interesting. For more on Sia's hijab journey, we'd like to introduce Ashma Jamal, who sat down with Sia.
I'm Ashma Jamal, and I sat down to speak with Sia on her experience of donning the hijab as a revert. She's talking to me over Zoom as she drives home after a long day of work. Sia tells me she transitioned into hijab slowly.
So I started to wear the hijab. I actually started it slowly. So I started wearing it to mosques at first, and then I was wearing it to religious classes, and then I started wearing it when I went out with my Muslim friends, and then I started wearing it to work. And so I kind of did it slowly. And I kind of wanted to be identified as a Muslim. I believe wholeheartedly in the principles of hijab. Mm-hmm. I believe hijab is an obligatory part of our faith, but I also believe someone makes the choice whether they want to follow that obligation or not.
And why is it important to you to cover your body and your hair?
I think it's really important because firstly, God tells us, and God is aware of our being more than we are. Like, who knows you better than the one that actually created you? So firstly and foremostly, it's an obligation, because God kind of told us, and he knows what's best for us. On a practical level, men and women are created differently. And I think the fact that women are chosen to be visible symbols of Islam speaks a lot, actually, about how our faith sees women and how our faith puts the trust in women to be positive representatives, ambassadors, and to kind of be that visible Muslim presence in any community. But in terms of moral principles, hijab completely removes sexuality from the foreground. It forces the outside world to interact with our mind, our character, our being, rather than our sexuality.
As a Reva, do you believe your hijab journey may have differed from women born into Islam?
I think yes and no. I think yes, because we kind of do it by ourselves. Like, I have friends that are Muslim, born Muslim friends that have told me, like, when they put on hijab, like, they were wearing their mum's hijabs and their mum helped them how to do it, or their mums took them out and bought them new scarves and new outfits, and their mums and their families made a big deal of it, or, you know, just this kind of excitement in the air. So I feel like it's different in that way. But I also know a lot of Muslims that their families didn't want them to wear hijab or niqab or whatever they choose to wear. Mm-hmm. And they had to kind of have that same struggle that I did. So I think in the majority of the sense, yes, my experience is different, but do I think it's an isolated experience only for Reverts? No. I think some Muslims have that experience as well, and we can't kind of negate that.
And how does that make you feel, not getting similar guidance yourself?
So, like, obviously in Islam, we have two types of jealousy. We have that hasad jealousy, which is really bad, like that evil jealousy of where you don't want someone to have that blessing. And then we have another type of jealousy, which is you want that blessing for yourself as well. I'm going to take it in that second sense. Of course, I get super upset. It doesn't affect me. I thought I'm going to cry now. It doesn't affect me now as much as what it used to. But, yeah, it's really not easy kind of seeing a lot of these people, their families all wear hijab, or their families encouraging, supportive, you know, they help them buy these clothes or whatnot. And it is, it's not easy. I think the whole revert experience is difficult with that. But I try and remind myself, like, actually, like, I have God, and God compensates, you know, God really compensates. Where he takes, he gives twice. So it is really hard. Like, I struggle a lot with that, but I also have an amazing, amazing support network of revert friends who've all had the same experiences, alhamdulillah. So I kind of have that to fall back on. But everyone wants their mum to be happy for them. You know, we're wired to want our parents' approval. It's a survival instinct to want your parents' approval. We're wired to want that. And I think it's healthy to break away from it, but it doesn't change the fact that it's heartbreaking to kind of force yourself to get out of it. So, yeah, it's hard.
Sia's honesty with her experience reiterates what everyone we've spoken to has affirmed. While one's journey with their hijab is important and deeply personal, it is not always easy.
Yes, it seems that it's natural that their relationship with their veil would go through many ups and downs, particularly in a society that doesn't always respect their decision. But despite the potential dangers, feelings of isolation and inner struggle, everyone we spoke to affirmed that the challenges were worth facing.
It definitely was hard, especially around people that don't really understand or aren't around people that wear hijab.
Meet Aisha. She's a 19-year-old Lebanese-Australian university student who started wearing the hijab a couple of months ago. Aisha's hijab journey has been particularly interesting. This is not the first time she's decided to wear the hijab. I will note that the woman you're about to hear from spoke on condition of anonymity, so Aisha is not her real name.
I've actually put on the hijab when I was around 14 or 15, and I did it to make my parents happy, and when I realized that didn't happen, I took it off, which was like probably a year after wearing it, probably a little less than a year. And then I was never close to the religion at all back then. So after a couple of years, after I graduated from school, actually, I became closer to the religion and I started learning more about it. And that's what made me start thinking about wearing it. And eventually what really decided to make me wear it was I did like everything to change myself, to become closer to the religion and to become a better person. And then the final thing was like putting on the hijab. And I used to always think like, if I'm a good person, I don't need to do it. Like, and then I just thought like, if I'm really that attached to this world that I can't even just cover up, then, you know, it's probably not the best sign. So I just thought I want to do it like as a dedication to the religion and to God.
Noor, Hiba, Najma, Aisha, and Sia's hijab stories all center on one main point. Observing hijab is a deeply personal decision that exists only between the individual and God.
While external factors and people may have provided inspiration to kickstart their journey, ultimately they have to be doing it for themselves and God.
I didn't like really want validation from anybody. I just like wanted to do it because I knew it was going to be hard for myself, especially because I've taken it off in the past. But I thought like putting it back on, a lot of people might look at me and not take me seriously for putting it back on, but I didn't want anybody's validation. I just wanted to do it for the sake of God. And I just feel like if you're going to do something as and it's like really, really hard for you to do, then like it's like a big commitment and it shows a lot and it shows your faith. It just kind of was like the final step for me to like feel like I've actually accomplished something like regarding faith and religion, because I wasn't really that religious when I was younger. And I used to always feel like, oh, if you don't wear the hijab, you're not like that religious. But me getting closer to the religion, actually learning and taking the like time to actually learn what it takes to be a good Muslim, like proved to me that hijab isn't the biggest priority. Like, you still have to be a good person, you still have to give charity, you still have to do your like prayers, but like at the end of the day, hijab is an obligation. So I just feel like I fulfilled the last obligation that I never could.
It's clear that covering is extremely important to these five women. All the women describe wearing the hijab as a deeply personal decision which reflects their identities. But would it also be fair to say that ultimately the hijab acts as a reminder of their deeper spiritual purpose?
Definitely. Observing hijab helps them maintain their faith and relationship with God as they move through the world. And that finishes our program. For more of the best stories and student journalism around Australia, go to our website, junctionjournalism.com.
And don't forget, there's a new episode of Making a Difference every month. You can subscribe on your favourite podcast app. This has been Eve Kogan, Ajmal Jamal, and Sarah Amir. Thanks for listening.